It's the weekend, and you have financial questions that need answering. That can only mean one thing. It's time for Jill on Money, the show that takes the mystery out of your finances. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome to the holiday edition of Jill on Money. Thanks so much for joining us. So what we decided to do is we went through the entire year and we wanted to figure out the best guests that we have heard and encountered. And this is Mark's favorite, so I want to make sure that I give the shout out to Mark because he is the producer and he gets almost like a triple, quadruple weighted vote. But what happened was I actually encountered this guy named James Altucher, who is an entrepreneur, he is a podcaster, he is a writer, he's everything. And I absolutely adored him. And I heard him on a podcast and I just was like, I really want to interview this guy. So what did I do? It was amazing. I just said, wait, I'm going to turn to social media. I, out of the blue, sent him a Twitter note just saying that he blew me away and would he be on my show? And he said, yes. So, James Altucher, you are, you're sort of like this living, breathing, iconic person before
me. I don't
know
about iconic.
Why not? You got the hair, that whole thing, you got like the Einstein hair. So, that is...
Well, Einstein was iconic, but maybe I'm... You can't be iconic if I'm being like him.
Oh, but you could be. Let me just say one thing that I Googled. So, I'm Googling his name. And I'm typing in James A, and five things come up on Google. Do you know this? Have you done this?
No,
it's fun.
I haven't.
James Avery is a jewelry designer. I don't know who that is.
The most famous James A out there.
James Allen is the second most, and also in jewelry. Don't ask me. I never heard of either of them. James and the Giant Peach, which I love. Roald Dahl.
Yeah.
James Arness, who played Marshall Dillon on Gunsmoke.
Wow, he's ahead of me. Gunsmoke. That was like when I was born.
Yeah. I think probably before you were born. James Altucher comes right after that. And what comes up is like a hodgepodge of stuff, right? Because you've sort of had a hodgepodge of career touch points.
Just like you, Jill.
Absolutely.
And do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
I love it.
Like a lot of people take Tony Hawk, the world champion skateboarder, sold $1 billion with the skateboard games as
yep.
an example. He's done the same thing with variation since he was 9 years old. He skateboarded, he immersed himself in the skateboard culture, done everything around skateboarding. And I just use him as an example. There are many others like him. But he did the same thing forever, for 30 years, and or 40 years. And so that obviously had benefits to him. Whereas having the hodgepodge, it's a little bit stressful, right? Have you been stressed?
At times I've been stressed, but I think it's more in keeping with my personality, and I sense that of you, that like you have exciting, creative parts of you, you have analytical parts of you, and it expresses itself at different times in different ways in your life, right? I mean, so I think it's, I don't know, I always thought that was weird. I was an athlete growing up, and then there were those kids who were like, oh no, I'm just playing one sport all the time. I just couldn't deal with that. And so I said, I'm not playing soccer 10, 12 months a year. That's nuts. So I played three sports, and that was what I did. Maybe I have short attention span. Maybe that's why. I'm not sure.
Or maybe kind of the societal definition of success is incorrect. Like, it might not necessarily be, you know, so a lot of these people, let's take Steven Spielberg as another example. He's done the same thing since he was a little kid, movies. And so we consider him a success. We don't know what really he's feeling like on the inside. It doesn't matter. Maybe he's happy. Maybe he's sad. But we kind of attribute, oh, if we know his name and he's created X amount of achievements and dollars, then that must be success. But perhaps it's success if someone doesn't know our name and we've had a lot of fun and we've done many different things. Maybe that's a success, but an untalked about success.
So let's go back. First of all, where'd you grow up?
I grew up right around here, partly in New York and partly in New Jersey.
And no worse for wear. I grew up same thing, the burbs of New York. And you went to college up at Cornell, is
yeah.
that right? And what'd you study there?
Studied computer science.
And how did you like it? I mean, Ithaca's kind of like scary
Ithaca's
place.
Beautiful. I hate
it's so cold.
It's very cold. It's very cold. I don't like that part. You know, Cornell is known for having a high suicide rate, and I think it's part because of the cold and the academic pressure. I actually think it was a big mistake that I went to college. I think actually it's a huge mistake, particularly it was a mistake then, and it's a bigger mistake now for someone to go to college. Because if you think about it, let's say, take computer science. You're using textbooks that are 30 years old. This is just an example. I could do this example in any subject, but computer science I'll use. You're using textbooks that are maybe decades old, and then you go out into the quote-unquote real world, and you don't know how to program in the real world. You could program every day in college, computers, but then you get out there and you have to suddenly do some, make a game or make someone's accounting software or whatever. You will have no clue what to do. So you could have started doing it at the age of 18, and instead you started doing it at the age of 22, and all these people who may have started at 18 have a four-year head start on you. Plus, they have no debt.
Well, I love that part. Mark and I get, you have to, if you go back and listen to the calls that we get, Mark has like, he through the glasses like dies every time we get the calls.
Mark,
like,
did you go to college?
He did. But he went to state school and Arizona State, and even though he's a New Yorker. But, you know, the thing that's weird is that, you know, I do all these segments on TV and I say, well, you know what? Every employer wants, like, college degree is like the entry fee to get in.
I don't think that's true anymore.
Like, I hope not.
Even Google has said they're no longer going to look at SAT scores and college GPAs.
I think that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Let's say you were 18 and you started a software company that a million people used. Isn't that much more qualification for Google than, oh, I got all A's at college? First off, to be successful in business, you need to get the best you will do is an F. Because if 51% of your decisions are correct, you might have a good business then. Nobody gets an A. Like, my 14-year-old daughter will call me and say, oh, guess what? I got 110 on my biology exam. And first off, how can you get more than 100? And they have all these formulas now that give kids more than 100. Second off, I say, well, how are you ever going to get challenged? Because the second you leave college, I guarantee you, someone's going to slap you in the face and you won't know how to deal with it.
And so failure is definitely a good thing. We always say that.
And I don't even know if this is failure. It's just reality. Like, reality is, life is a little more difficult than portrayed in high school and then college. I just visited my alma mater for the first time in 20 years and or 15 years, and I couldn't believe it. It's like fantasy land for adults. Like, elevators are connecting everything. There's gourmet meals. There's kids are like bloated and obese because there's gourmet meals served everywhere. And then it's just like magic. Like, the computer centers, I don't know. It's like where I would want to live in an old age home, but not when I'm 18 years old, maybe.
We're talking to James Altucher. When we come back from the break, we're going to get more about, maybe not so much why college isn't worth it, because I think we've covered that, but I want to hear more about your career. He is on your website, trader, writer, entrepreneur, podcaster, all around very interesting guy. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Question, call anytime, 24-7, 855-411-JILL. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, give us a holler, 855-411-JILL. Send an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. But really, don't do that today because we've got a special guest in the house.
Although we can answer money questions if you want.
We totally could. It'd be interesting to get your take on this because, well, we're going to talk a little more. So anyway, this is my guest, James Altucher. It's an interesting name. Chairman?
No, kind of Ellis Island type of name.
Yeah.
Just from Russia.
Somewhere back.
Yeah.
Back way back when.
Back in the day.
All right. College is a waste of money, according to James. But you went.
I did go, which people sometimes say, oh, you went, now you don't want anybody else to go. But the reality is I went and I saw what a waste of time it was.
What happened after you graduated from college? What happened next for you?
I went to graduate school also. Yeah. And then I went to college undergrad computer science. I went to grad school for computer science. Then I took a job at a small little company called HBO, Home Box Office, and I was a computer programmer for them at first.
Huh.
And I was so bad that they had to send me to remedial school to learn how to program a computer so I could work for them. I had to go to a remedial school for 2 months. And this was after spending 3 years in college and 2 years in graduate school doing nothing but programming computers.
Why were you – what happened? What was the disconnect?
The disconnect is that the real world is a different world than college. Think about it in every way. College is just an extension of high school. When was the last time you hung out with 30 people exactly the same age and demographic as you?
Never.
College.
Right.
Like, it's just not the real world. And then, again, you're learning from teachers who haven't – nothing wrong with the teachers. They're passionate about what they do. But they're not – they haven't been in the real world for X number of years. So you're not really getting accustomed to real world problems. And not that those – not that it's important to learn – you know, I do think it's important to learn the arts and learn, you know, kind of at a deeper level some of these things you're passionate about. But you will learn that, too, if you're really passionate about it outside of college.
And so when you were at HBO, you go to remedial programming school, which must be quite a scene. I feel like there's a sitcom episode right there.
Oh, yeah. We were all just like, I won't even describe.
We'll take some pictures after the show so everyone can see that you have eschewed your geekdom. You're now,
yes.
You're very cool. You're sort of uber cool now.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, you are.
Or
you are.
Uber nerdish.
Yeah, I like that. But it's back. It's back. Then, so what happened from HBO? Like, you were there for how long?
Okay, well, then I decided I really love this small little thing called the internet, which nobody was really familiar with then. And I kept telling my boss, you've got to, you know, you're all interested in interactive cable TV, but you can do it all through the internet. You don't have to do it through, you know, come up with your own software through cable lines. And they're like, James, why don't you just let the smart guys handle this? The cable guys know what they're doing. This internet thing is for academics only. It's just a fad. And so I decided this internet thing's going to be bigger than ever. And I didn't really know anything about business. So I did the worst thing you could possibly do, which is I created a profitable internet company in the 90s. Like, if you had created an unprofitable internet company, you were a billionaire. So I created a profitable internet company. Left HBO, made a company that built websites for, and Jill, you could tell just by looking at me, every gangster rap label. I made all of their websites. You could name a rapper and I made their website. And then a lot of the other record labels, movie studios like Miramax, New Line, Warner Brothers. I did all of HBO's websites, of course. So I built up a pretty sizable company making websites for entertainment companies. And it was profitable. We sold it. And then I made a lot of money, which is not bragging, because I instantly lost. It took about a summer. And I when I sold this company, I sold it for cash. So it wasn't like paper, you know, internet stock. Sold all for cash. In one summer, I managed to spend millions and millions of dollars, and I went completely broke.
Hold on, time out. It's hard to spend that
much. Ask me your money questions now.
I'm just going to, and now James will be fielding all of your financial questions. You get a pile of cash. You're in your 20s?
No, I was
30s?
I want to say 31.
Okay. And you get this pile of cash, and what are you spending it on? I mean, it is hard to spend that much money that quickly.
Yes, it was very hard. Well, I bought a, you know, a nice penthouse next to a building you might know as the World Trade Center. Mm. And I remember saying to the real estate agent, this was 1999, I remember saying to the real estate agent, well, what if, you know, some terrorist bombed this? What's going to happen to me being a narcissist? What's going to happen to the value of this house? And she says, you can't live your life that way. And of course, I bought the house. So I bought a lot of art, and then for some reason, after making this money on the internet, here's a big problem, a cognitive bias people have, which is if they do well in one thing, they suddenly think they're going to be geniuses at everything else. So I figured, okay, I was a genius at the internet, maybe not, because in retrospect, I might have been just lucky too. And I decided, okay, I'm going to just buy lots of stocks and private companies and so on.
Oh, so now you're just going to be like a private equity slash investor, right. Ne'er-do-well. I made a bunch of money. I'm a genius, right?
Yeah. So I poured it all back into stocks. They started going down. So I borrowed money, of course, against my house, the smart thing to do. Mm. And I poured all that money into stocks.
He's saying that sarcastically.
I am saying that sarcastically. Don't do it. There are times when you should borrow against your house. This was not one of them. And I lost everything. I remember one time towards the end. I mean, I honestly thought I was going to die. I thought $0 meant death to me. And I even was trying to figure out, would it be better for my two daughters at the time, you know, two daughters to have the, they wouldn't remember me because they were very young. Would it be better for them to have the benefits of my life insurance policy or for them to have a father? I was so depressed because I figured I'd won the lottery. I suddenly realized how lucky I had been. And I thought it might, maybe it'd be better for them to have money. Money was so important to me. It was stupid to me.
But wait a second. Let me just stop there. So did you grow up with, you grew up with some money? Like, you grew up comfortable upper middle class Jewish family, burbs-ish?
You're totally, like, reading my demographic
here. I'm giving a guess.
Yeah, except my dad also lost all his money and went broke, so...
Mine did, too, but that's what I'm interested in. That's interesting. It could be our common thread.
And, you know, so I guess I was always afraid of doing it, of repeating his pattern, and then I did it. And it seemed like there was no way out, and he kind of died that way, died broke. Oh. And so I figured that was going to happen to me also. And so I was just depressed all the time, and everything bad was happening, and I don't know. So that's where that left me. And so I figured, okay, I need to understand a little bit more of this money thing. And it had been many years since I had been computer programming at that point, but I wrote some software to model the stock market. And I started investing in such a way that the computer would make all the decisions, not me.
Wait, you were the first robo-advisor, basically.
Maybe, maybe.
Or the first program trader.
Well, there wasn't a lot of us back then, it's true, in terms of quantitative trading. Mm-hmm. And this was 2001, 2002. And I started to be very successful at it. So I figured, okay, I don't know anything about hedge funds, so I might as well start one.
Right.
And so I learned everything I could about it, and people started giving me money to invest, and I started a hedge fund. Then I started getting much more involved in finance, and I started a fund of hedge funds where, because I knew so many hedge funds in New York City, I figured I could pick the best ones to invest in. So I raised money for that, and then I started writing for TheStreet.com, the Financial Times, MarketWatch, which at the time was owned by CBS. I started writing everywhere, for Fortune, Forbes, every financial site. I was on CNBC all the time. No offense to CBS.
It's okay.
But
we take no offense.
And but then I started another website company, which was kind of like a social media site for stocks and finance. I sold that. I ended up losing all that money.
Hold on. Wait a minute. I'm not going to let you off scot-free on that.
Don't let
one.
Me off scot-free.
All right. Come on.
How do you spell Scott in that case?
I'm going to say S-C-O-T. And that's it. I'm not putting a second T.
Right. I think you're right.
I don't think I'm putting a second T on it. You're listening to Jill on Money. We are blessed. I feel blessed today to have James Altucher.
Well,
that's so nice. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. More with James when we return. We'll be right back.
Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Want to get in touch? Call or email any day, anytime. 855-411-JILL or AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. Just because you find
yourself off the Mark, street. Who is this? James doesn't know who this is. All right. You're back with Jill on Money. We have a very special guest in studio.
Thank you, Jill. Thanks for inviting me.
It happens so, it's just a moment of bliss.
You tweeted and I said yes.
Exactly. It's a beautiful thing. James Altucher, serial entrepreneur. Failed computer programmer.
Yes. failed serial entrepreneur.
No. You had success.
Yeah,
you just blew out.
Yeah.
Okay. So, writer, podcaster, big thinker. I like that. I think that that could be your title, like big thinker.
Put it on my card.
I like that.
You don't have a card,
do you?
No.
I was just doing. Someone asked me to do a segment about the best gifts for high school and college graduates, right? It's college graduation. You can see how we're dying for content here on the networks, right? And I went on, was doing research, and I saw someone said, card case. I said, oh, my God.
High school kids have business cards? I don't know,
but even a college kid, like, who carries a business card like that?
Yeah,
that
like,
I mean, that's very odd.
When you're in college, what possible meaningful thing could you have done in life that requires you to have a card?
I barely think that you've done anything meaningful by the time you got your first job. I just had this conversation with my nephew, and I was like, you know, you think you know something, but actually the employer knows you know nothing. The employer is just basically betting on your potential. So
good point.
Be a good boy, do what they tell you to do, show up early, leave late, be smart. Get as much information as you can and figure out, like, how to use this a little bit. This is a great experience for you, but deliver the goods, right? You got to deliver the goods. When last we left your life, James, you build websites for rap stars. Who's your favorite rap artist of that time?
Coolio.
Really?
Yeah, Gangster's Paradise.
Uh-huh.
Can't go better.
Uh-huh.
I've even had him on my podcast.
Is that right?
Yeah.
How are they with money? Should I have them on a personal finance podcast?
No.
No, not at all.
You know, you should have maybe some, well, 50 Cent, obviously.
Hello.
Or the Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh.
Who I also did their websites.
Interesting. We'll be talking. You know, you're a master networker because you just like people.
Yes.
You're really into relationships.
Which I think is the key to networking.
Absolutely. We're going to get to that. So you build this website company, you sell it, you blow all the money. You then say, wait a minute. I can invest. I can be almost a private equity investor plus a hedge fund guy, a fund of funds guy. You get all these people give you money. Now, why would they give you money? Because you had a great track record or what?
I did have a good track record. I also was doing something new, writing software to model the markets. Now it's a very common thing, but I was doing something new. I was also writing a lot for TheStreet.com and the Financial Times and CNBC about stocks and the economy and finance. So I was building a name. And I think there are other things that are the reasons why people invest their money with other people. And those are more subtle as opposed to like, oh, track record or, oh, I saw him on CNBC. And, you know, it's just a matter of like, you know, putting in the time and getting to know somebody and researching the investor and impressing them in whatever ways that are particular to them. I think you have to research somebody to win them over.
Absolutely. It's sales.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and that's the sales experience, right? It's to build a relationship, trust. I give you my money. You deliver some good stuff. That's great.
I think you also have to be willing to say no to an investor.
Absolutely.
Because some investors are, you know, investors are a very hard breed to manage. And, you know, often they're very rude and because they gave you money, they think they can call you at 4 a.m. and yell at you, and which has happened to me. And I'll tell you a story. Can I tell you a story?
Absolutely.
So one time I was up 14 months in a row. 14 months in a row.
What are you, Madoff?
No. Although I have a story there too, but that's another story. And then I was down 1 month. I hadn't heard from any of my investors for a year.
Right.
I was down 1 month. 100% of my investors called me.
Every one of them called me. Come on.
And they said, what is going on? Why were you down? I was down less than 0.5%. And so in that case,
it's brutal.
But it was just that's when I decided, you know what? That's when I switched from a fund to a fund of funds, thinking it would be a little better to be one step removed, but it didn't help.
You know, I have a similar story. In 1999, I was just like a retail investment advisor. And I will say that 1999 was really one of the worst years of my life because, you know, I'm sort of schooled in old time like valuation and
Yeah, 1999 was bad.
Very bad year for me.
2000, 2001, and 2002 would have been
fantastic.
Good for you. Yes,
1999. I have many people fire the firm because of underperformance. Now, I don't know. Maybe the S&P was up 30% that year, and I remember getting fired because we were up 19%, and I remember feeling like, I don't get it anymore. There's something, like something has shifted. I must be wrong. I really kind of got spooked. And I said to my business partner, you know, we're going to just stick to the way I was the chief investment officer. And I said, you know, we got to stick to this. Like, I can't do it any way different. Maybe I should just get out. Maybe I'll just be done. Maybe you should fire me. I don't know. But I don't know how to chase something higher. I'm just not programmed to do this. But then 2000, 2001, and 2002 were like the best years ever. Not that anyone called and thanked me.
Yeah, no one will ever. If you make someone money, they will cross the street when they see you. No one will ever thank you, no matter what. You lose somebody a penny, and they're all over you. But what's interesting is people think the stock markets were down 2000, 2001, and 2002. If you were a value investor, the markets in general were up.
Yep.
You had a great year.
Yep.
The economy was doing fine.
Yep.
You know, we had a mini recession, but came right back after the war in 2003.
It was really, I have to say, it was like those were some of the best years. Actually, some of the best years for gathering assets for us also. We're talking to James Altucher. It is the Jill on Money Show. Oh, I said it wrong. Altucher.
Yeah,
Altucher.
Anything goes.
Do you know someone kept saying to me, I said I was telling someone I was going to interview, they're like, oh yeah, James Altucher. They want to put a sh in there.
Yeah, that's the common version of the name, but it's Altucher fast. Altucher.
Altucher. More with James when we return. 855-411-JILL. We'll be right back. Just because I can't see you.
From rookie investors to savvy veterans, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Call now, 855-411-JILL, or email askjill@jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. We are blessed to have James Altucher here as our guest.
Happy to be here, Jill.
So awesome.
By the way, this song?
Yeah.
Russell Simmons was just on my podcast, and of course, he discovered Run DMC. So,
pretty awesome.
Love song
I love that. I really had no. I mean, I liked rap music early, but I kind of got out of it when it was the whole misogynist part of it.
Well, like any art form, 99% is going to be bad,
mm-hmm.
and 1% is going to be very good.
Yeah.
And so you could say the same thing about rap. But let me ask you this.
Anything.
Since we kind of had, you know, rock, metal, heavy metal, punk, grunge. Oh, no, new wave, punk, new wave, pop, grunge. Since grunge, what music other than rap has actually kind of meant something to a culture?
I know. It's
is
hard.
Is there anything now? Like now it's all Disney pop.
I know. Well, but speaking of which, and we'll get to this, have you ever been in the interview part of your life, and we'll get to that part of your life, but have you been intimidated or nervous or starstruck interviewing someone like I am right now?
Well, you don't have to be starstruck with me, but yes, definitely all the time.
Who?
Oh my gosh. Everybody from... I mean, I just interviewed Brian Grazer in Hollywood. He's produced $15 billion of my favorite movies of all time. I mentioned earlier Coolio. I was starstruck by him. You know, guys like, you know, Wayne Dyer and Tony Robbins on the self-help side, Mark Cuban on the entrepreneurial side, Arianna Huffington. So many. I actually tend to not interview someone unless I'm starstruck and nervous around them.
That's great. So, I just had a wild experience where I interviewed Dame Julie Andrews before a live crowd.
Wow.
And
before a live crowd, that's hard.
Yeah, it was awesome. And it was in London. It's like 500 people in the audience. I'm not starstruck by interviewing Lloyd Blankfein or something. Like, you know, they're guys that I cover. I know them, you know, or James Gorman. But I am a Broadway show hound. I love musical theater. And when they told me Julie Andrews, how shall we say, plotzed.
Did you sing The Hills Are Alive in front of her? Didn't she do The Sound of Music?
Yes, she did. Well, yes, she did. I didn't because what I really wanted to do was start the interview with the beginning of The Sound of Music when she sings, let's start at the very beginning. It's a very good place to start. But that was too easy.
Right.
So instead I said, we sit down. And I had to break the ice even for myself. I'd met her in her dressing room just for like 15 or 20 minutes before, and we chit-chatted. And I said, so you know we have something in common, because I like to find a thread, right? You're an interviewer. You like get a relationship.
Yeah.
So I said, okay,
very
you know,
important.
I said, you initiated the role of Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady on Broadway. You introduced Eliza to the Broadway audience. And I said, and I played Eliza's father, Doolittle, at Camp Pointeau Pines. And that's where, and she was very funny. She's like, oh, I'm sure you were wonderful. And she was very gracious about it. And we started talking, and we just talked about her life, like I'm doing with you.
I think that's a good technique.
It's not, I have to say there aren't that many huge stars, like of that caliber, with the class and the grace and... So it was really an amazing experience.
You know, it's also hard to interview someone, an actor or an actress, about themselves, because they're so used to playing other people. It's not that they don't know how to play themselves. It's just that it's unclear what they have to say about themselves. So often, you know, when you see an actor or an actress on a talk show, they're promoting something so they can talk about that. But if you're just interviewing them about their career, it's a little more difficult. I find that to be a challenge. I find actors and athletes to be a challenge, because athletes are so intelligent, but they're intelligent in their body. They're like the smartest people in the world with their bodies, but not necessarily with their verbal communication. So that's difficult too.
Absolutely. I gotta do some athletes. Mark will want some athletes. We definitely want that. All right, so just a couple of minutes before the next break. So you get out of the hedge fund business, and then what year am I in? The mid-2000s?
2006. And I decided then I was going to create, I've got to get back into this internet thing, because that was my roots.
Yeah, I think it had been proven that it was okay.
Yeah.
It was going to be all right.
So I created a social media site for people interested in stocks. It was called Stock Picker, without an E at the end. And I had many sites interested, like Yahoo, Google, Forbes.com, many companies were contacting me to do deals. And I sold the company just 8 months after I started it to TheStreet.com, which I had already had a relationship with because I was writing for them. And I sold it for a significant amount of money. And
do not tell me you lost it again.
I did lose it all.
Come
again.
Come on.
All of it.
James, oh my God. My stomach hurts.
There's three skills with money: making it, keeping it, growing it. So making it, I had down pat. At that point, and this is still 2007, 2008, keeping it and growing it were difficult for me.
We're going to get to when you finally figured that next part out. We're talking to James Altucher here on the Jill on Money Show, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. We are joined this show by James Altucher. And James, so you said you're really good at making money. You create companies. You probably are good at keeping money for a short period of time.
No, never. As soon as I make it, or not now I'm good.
Right.
Yeah, now I'm okay.
Okay.
Back then, this is 10 years ago and 20 years ago for the first two times. As I said earlier, the three skills are growing it, keeping it, making it. I was good at growing it. I was good at making it, not good at keeping it or growing it.
And so in 2006, you sell to thestreet.com, and do you have to work there? Do you have to just write for them? Or are you doing operating it or the site or not?
Yeah, I worked there a little bit, and I was a major shareholder of the company after that. So I worked there for a while, but then I moved on to other things, and I quickly lost everything, and I kind of had to start from scratch again.
And when was that? Like at the financial crisis, or is that before?
Yeah, it was part of the financial crisis, 2009. You know, but really around 2009, my whole life changed. Like I decided I hate everything I'm doing. I hate this finance stuff just with a passion. And I didn't have anything going for me. I didn't have any job. I wasn't writing anywhere. I wasn't doing anything. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to write for myself. And I decided to say, okay, this is what I was writing. I failed. Here's all the ways I failed. And I was just writing post after post after post or article after article. I failed at this business. I failed at that business. I failed at this investment. I failed at this relationship. And suddenly I found, rather than a small audience of people interested in Apple stock, I found there's an audience of millions interested in seeing how someone fails and gets over it. So I developed a completely new career just writing about my story.
And when we come back next hour, we're going to hear more of the James Altucher story here on the Jill on Money show. And if you've missed any part of this interview, you better get busy because you're going to have to download the podcast. Go to JillOnMoney.com. James, don't worry. We'll give it to you. You can post on your website. Do whatever you want with it.
Oh, I'll definitely provide it.
And you can hear all about James the early years. We could just build it up into chapters.
Yes.
It'd be fabulous. All right. Stay tuned. More with James Altucher here on Jill on Money. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. Ask Jill at JillOnMoney.com. We'll be right back.